Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So stay tuned. This is Bill Hendrickson, your host of Time Out in windy and cloudy Carrboro, North Carolina. And usually we don't have too many people who are leaders of tomorrow. Last week we had a lady, an 88-year-old woman who is a noted restaurateur in the area, Mama Dip, and she's a leader of yesterday. Today we have leaders of tomorrow. We have Jasper Cobb and her friend, Christine Abernathy. I don't know why I have trouble with Christine. Hey, hi, girls, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
Jasper is usually sitting here.
Yes, I have been DJing for 11 years now.
And now she's sitting over there, and she's soon to be elsewhere, from what I hear.
Yes, I am moving to Montreal, Canada, on Wednesday.
And that's going to be, well, Canada, a lot of people are moving to Canada, but not for maybe the same reasons you are.
No, I am moving there, I guess, because I can.
Because you can, okay, with yeah. Somebody.
Yeah, with my mother.
Well, that's good to be with your mother because she is Canadian, you said.
Yeah, she is a Canadian citizen.
And so Montreal, you told me briefly in the Audi room here, who you're going to be, what's your living arrangement up there?
I'm going to be living in a collective with 8 other people.
In a collective, okay. And who, is there a sponsor for the collective, kind of?
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't know how collectives are managed, but they have to be kind of, responsibility has to be shared by everybody, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun. Boy, oh boy. Canada. It's a nice city. I've been to Montreal once. I've been to Quebec once. Where have I been? To Vancouver. So I love Canada. You're going to travel around while you're there, too?
I've already traveled around Canada, so.
Oh, you have?
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Christine, you are not a native of here. You're native of Charlotte. Is that what you told?
Yeah, I'm a native of Charlotte, but I moved to Chapel Hill in 2009 and have been living around here ever since.
So why did you move to Chapel Hill, and what have you been doing since 2009?
Well, I moved here to attend university at UNC, and when I graduated, I was just beginning to be engaged with the Northside community a little bit more. And as a university student, I didn't really root down very much in the community. I was more of a member of a transient student population. And So I learned about the erosion of the community and culture there that was due to transient students, and decided that I wanted to give back. So I stuck around the area and started working for various nonprofits and trying to create good in the community.
Well, there are plenty of nonprofits around here, and I've had a number of them on the radio show. And I mean, it's terrific that people do gather together to form a nonprofit for an objective. I mean, you guys were involved with youth work, I guess. Both, I know Jasper's been, and you've been involved specifically with one youth group.
I've been working with young folks probably since I was a teenager in various capacities. And after I graduated, you know, I was 22 years old, and I realized that that was a very effective way for me to engage with the community, was mm-hmm. through working with mostly teenage people, but also some folks that are a little bit younger, because not everybody necessarily has that skill set. But I realized mm-hmm. that I kind of could naturally work with folks pretty easily across age differences. So
great. Well, that's good. Well, when I talked to you, Jasper, 6 months ago about your activity, and we talked about doing a radio show. So I haven't learned anything since then. So today is your day. You got 50 minutes.
All right.
But not as a monologue.
Yes. I guess so. The biggest thing that I've done in the past 6 months was I led a 3-day-long teacher training on sexual assault in high schools for teachers at my school. And it was optional, so not all the teachers attended, but I did this through the group called Youth Against Rape Culture, which is a youth group that works on fighting rape culture with the Rape Crisis Center of Orange County.
Okay, so back off a little bit now. Tell me what you started, what the training was, and how you got involved with this. Is there rape activity or similar activity in high school?
Yes, there most definitely is. I guess the teacher training came on when a group of college students from UNC led a survey at Chapel Hill High School, which is the high school that I went to.
Oh, the college students did the survey at your high school. Are you in Chapel Hill or Carrboro?
I go to Chapel Hill High.
Oh, okay.
And so these college students, they led a survey with a couple of different classes at my school, ranging from 9th grade to 12th grade. So uh-huh. it was like a clear cut of like all the students at my school. And it asked them the questions about whether they knew what Title IX was, which is students' rights with sex discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And it also asked about whether they were comfortable going to adults at their school if they face sexual assault, and which adults
all age at high school, all high school ages?
Yes.
Okay.
And so overwhelmingly, students said that they were not comfortable going to principals or their counselors or their assistant principals at my school if they were faced with sexual assault, that they were most comfortable going to teachers, which makes a lot of sense because it's teachers that students see every day, and it's the teachers that the students know, and the teachers know the students. So
you gain a little confidence with that, with the teacher, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas with our counselors and assistant principals and principals, we do not see them every day. And many students don't know who their assistant principals are and who their counselors are and have never interacted with them before.
Mm-hmm.
So from that, we realized that teachers don't know what to do if students were to go to them on sexual assault charges. So me and my friends who were working with YARC, the Youth Against Rape Culture Group, we put together a informative slideshow about what to do, like for do's and don'ts for teachers when a student comes to them asking
for help.
You put
this together for the teachers?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
And so it said, I mean, it talked about like steps that teachers had to go through that they're required to do. And then things that they should do just on the basis of, like, being a good person.
Mm-hmm. So this was done, when did you do this? How long? A year ago? Last month?
It was in March.
Okay.
Or April. It was in April.
And all the teachers have witnessed this, have participated?
No, not all the teachers attended. It was really low attendance because I think most teachers think that they know what to do, or some teachers don't care, or they were busy. It took place during lunch at my school, and some teachers have, they're helping their students at lunch.
Oh, okay.
So there was a lot of factors for why not all the teachers attended, but we did have a good turnout. So.
So are you're still in high school? Well, are you still you're?
Yes, I'm still in high school.
But what are you going to be doing? Let's change subject for a minute. What are you going to be doing about your education while you're out of the country?
So I'm going to be homeschooled by my mom for a couple classes, and I'm also going to a francization program in Montreal, which is basically part of a school that is there to teach immigrant kids who don't know how to speak French how to speak French and how to assimilate into Montreal culture.
Okay, and then you're coming back to graduate from Chapel Hill High School, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe. So that depends if you come back.
Yeah.
If you don't come back, you'll continue your education in Canada, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning to get advanced education, like college and all that stuff, somewhere down the road? Or what's your desire?
My desire, I suppose, is to be... I still want to do a lot of work within activism, but I want to focus more on climate change and science. That is my true calling. And so I would probably go to school to be a marine biologist or a climatologist or a glaciologist.
Okay. Well, so. I'm sure there are schools that will help you go in that direction.
Yeah.
So you two women work together on some of these projects. Now, you said in your note to me that Christine Abernathy is a fellow activist who was the adult supervisor of the Youth Community Project. Is that what you were just talking about? Or
So we weren't just talking.
What's a youth community project then? You can both talk about this.
So the Youth Community Project is yet another organization that focuses on empowering youth in the local community.
Okay. That's a very interesting topic, so that needs some explanation.
Yeah, so I guess recently we put on the Youth Pop-Up Art Show, which was a pop-up art show featuring youth pieces, and some of the pieces were sold. And this took place at Cameron's, which is right across the street from us.
Mm-hmm. So is that a continuing organization, or you do things from time to time? How does that work?
The organization has a youth leadership board, for lack of a better word. We focus more on organic grassroots growth and really working with the young people that we have to see where their interests are, where their skill sets are, and how they really want to embody their passions and articulate their thoughts in our community. And so the youth art exhibit has been going on in various iterations for a few years annually, with a focus on really amplifying youth voices and teen expression. I think that every year we hear adults saying that they're surprised by how skilled the teens are in the area, by the themes that are covered and kind of the intensity and depth of thought and work that goes into the art exhibit. And it's typically youth run and youth curated to an extent.
Is it all volunteer people working with it, or some staff people?
It has typically been a volunteer-driven. That project has typically been volunteer-driven. Our founder, who is like Mama Dip, also an octogenarian.
Oh, yeah.
Elaine Jerome is an artist herself, and she, I think, really pioneered the art exhibit a few years ago, and she works typically on a volunteer basis to help make that happen, and this year it was totally youth run.
Yeah.
Is this in Orange County, or where is this activity taking place?
It's the Chapel Hill Carborough area.
Okay, not the rest of the county.
No. Someday.
Well, Queer Youth Circus is in Durham,
yes.
Right?
Well, yeah. How long has it been around, this Youth Community Project?
I believe the Youth Community Project has been operating at a grassroots level since, I want to say, 2010,
okay.
2011.
And you've been involved quite a few years, several years?
Yes, I came on board in 2013.
Mm-hmm. So how do you recruit students, or do your students just know it's there? And just, how do students choose to become in a project of that sort? And what's the ratio of active students and inactive students?
What do you mean by inactive students?
People who don't care.
People who don't care.
Other things, maybe play soccer or don't do anything.
Huh. I think that's what you're asking is more touching on the level of engagement overall that we have when we think of teens in our community.
Yeah.
And I think that talking to folks like Jasper is a perfect example of kind of the passion, the vibrancy, and the competence that we do have in terms of teens working to change the world locally. And so, Jasper, what's your take on teen involvement?
I think there is a really, really, really strong base of teenagers who really want to get involved in helping out the community and helping to change the world. But since we are all full-time students, and a lot of teens have jobs or they play sports after school, that it's really, really difficult for them to get involved in a volunteer organization. And a lot of people also have to take care of their families. So it's not that many teenagers in the area that are actually actively involved in activism groups like the Youth Community Project or Youth Against Rape Culture, but a lot of kids want to be a part of it.
Well, you have been interested in this for a while. How do you identify yourself or others who want to follow a program of helping an active program of helping one way or another, as opposed to what triggered it in your mind, in your soul, to get out and do these things?
I guess I first really got into activism when I was in like third or fourth grade, when I first learned about what climate change was. And I guess I started out doing a lot of work, like pro-recycling work and pro-composting. My mom then started working at the recycling center for Chapel Hill Carborough. So I kind of did some work through that, but I was also in elementary school, so I couldn't do that much. And when I got into middle school, I actually started my middle school GSA. And so that really sparked my activism working with queer youth in the area. And so I started working with the Inside Out Youth Board in Durham.
Mm-hmm. I tried to find Inside Out the way you spelled it on the web, and I couldn't find it on the web.
Inside Out's website is insideout180.org.
Okay. Now, that's another organization. Inside Out. It's
yes.
not Youth Community, or it's not the Rape Crisis Group. We'll get back to that in a minute. But when you did your instruction program for the teachers, did you get help from the Rape Crisis, Orange County Rape Crisis?
Yeah. So
we've had them on the show a few times.
Yeah. So since YARC does work through the Rape Crisis Center, we have two adults, Rachel Valentine and Dolores Chandler, who are at all of our meetings and really help us to get our goals achieved. And they work really closely with us in all of our projects. And so Rachel Valentine was at the teacher training to help answer questions and to help the teachers really fully understand our message.
Okay. Now, you also tell me in your notes that you were on something for the town of Carborough, the Youth Advisory Board.
Yeah, so I was the co-chair for the town of Carborough's Youth Advisory Board, which
but
was...
But you don't... Do you live in Carborough?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, your house. I've been to your home. I'm not sure what... It's one of those streets that half Carborough and half Chapel
yeah,
Hill.
Yeah, so my address is Chapel Hill, but the houses were built when it was in Chapel Hill, and then Carborough annexed it. So
okay.
We're in Carborough.
But you still go to Chapel Hill High School, which
yeah,
is okay.
Yeah, so I live like 2 miles from the
yeah.
school. So.
Okay, back to my question then on the Youth Advisory Board. You were co-chair, you said, and what was that responsibility?
Yeah, so it was the first year that it's ever been in existence. So we didn't do much. We mostly took, it was a full year that I was on the board.
When was this? Recently?
Yeah, this past school year.
Okay.
And we really focused on like what youth in Carborough need and what we can achieve on this board. And we met all of the members of the Board of Aldermen, and we kind of worked with them. And so really the first year was us filling out our roles and seeing how this new group can like take on the youth of Carborough and all of our needs.
So it's going to survive without you, I guess.
Yeah, since it runs through
elsewhere.
It runs through the town, so it's going to forever be a thing.
Okay. But, you're so involved with these things locally. It's kind of a shame that the United States is losing you to somebody up in Montreal. But you'll have to get involved up there, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. Overall, you said that I want to make sure I understood the answer about the number of kids in this area. I would say I'll make an assumption that maybe the Chapel Hill Carborough area has a group of kids that might be more interested in this than some inner city in a major city like Charlotte, where you came from. What do you think about that?
Could you rephrase that question?
Well, this Orange County, particularly Chapel Hill and Carborough, have a pretty high educated level of adults, mm-hmm. of parents of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And fairly interested in events in the world, like Jasper's interested in climate change and environmental work. But how about the inner city of Charlotte, which might be less affluent and maybe educated? Parents might not be as educated as some of the parents here. You grew up there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I attended East Mecklenburg High School, and so some folks would say that high school doesn't really qualify as maybe what comes to mind when you think of inner city. It was very ethnically diverse. It had a lot of different folks representing different income levels. I really enjoyed my time there. And what comes to mind is I think that Chapel Hill Carrboro is a lot more centralized because it has like a main, the downtown is small, it's walkable. So as a young person, it's easier to...
You mean which downtown? But either downtown.
Generally, having a main street and Franklin Street is so much more accessible. Being, you know, 14 years old in Charlotte and trying to organize and meet up with folks that you're working with or trying to collaborate with might mean a 30 or 40 minute drive or taking a complicated bus system. So I think that there's other aspects, maybe geographically, maybe in terms of planning, urban and city planning, that lend itself to this area maybe being more of a cultural hub and really being able to invest in its young people and having young people be able to organize themselves collectively. But I will say when I was 14, I started a campaign to legalize industrial hemp growth at my local school.
Industrial hemp growth. Wow, mm-hmm. Good for you.
And so I think that, and then when I was 15, I wanted to start my own 501c3 to work with my peers to have a space where we could do our own arts projects that are all youth driven. And once I found out that starting a 501c3 required, I think at the time it was $300 or $500. okay. That dream kind of dwindled, but I think
at that age you didn't have a lot of money floating around.
Yeah, so I think that I actually worked with my peers to do a variety of productions at local coffee shops and various performances, and we kind of did our own street art and performances around Charlotte. Mm-hmm. So I think that what's important about youth organizing is having folks that will support you in your work. You know, being someone that maybe doesn't have access to a printer to print like a 50-page script, and having someone that can take you to Kinko's or help cover that. Just a little bit more infrastructure. I think that young people universally have the spark necessary to create change. Mm-hmm. It's just about finding someone who can light the match.
Okay, that's good. Well, you have a good analysis of the situation, and it's I'm glad you're here working with people like Jasper. Are you learning something from her, Jasper?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so tell me about a queer youth-led organization, Inside Out. Tell me about that.
All right, so Inside Out, I haven't worked with them for a couple of years, so my memory is a bit fogged with them. I was on the youth board, and we had queer youth hangouts every weekend or every other weekend, where basically any queer youth in like the Chapel Hill Durham area who wanted to hang out, we would all go.
So why do you say queer youth?
Because they are queer youth.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you could maybe expand the term queer.
So when I say queer, I mean anyone who is of the LGBTQ identity spectrum.
Okay. So it's a variety of that crowd.
Yeah.
Of that group, I don't know, identify themselves as LGBT, whatever the initials are. I always forget them, but I see it a lot. But, okay, so you were involved. Where do you fit in that group? Do you fit in as a member or as a friend?
I was on the youth board, so I was a leader.
Okay.
And I guess now I'm a friend.
Okay, that's great. So how's the activity there going? I mean, that's interesting, because I guess they need their group, don't they? They need their cooperation with one another.
Yeah. So I haven't been on the board for a couple years because it's focused in Durham, and
it is focused in Durham.
Yeah, so the trip from Carrboro to Durham was a bit much for me every week.
Sure.
But I know recently they put on Queer Prom, which is like a dance party, free dinner thing for any queer youth in the area who don't want to go to regular prom, mm-hmm. or can't go to regular prom.
I see.
And so that happened, and it was awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I know they had the and Banquet and Gaiety, which is happened the week after Queer Prom, when they awarded different members of the community who have done really awesome things in the past year. So I know they awarded a lot of people who lead their high school or middle school GSAs or QSAs,
mm-hmm.
Which is like student-run clubs within the school, and also other members of the community who have done really cool stuff.
Well, are those groups, is that particular group accepted generally by others in the schools community, in the school community in both Chapel Hill, Carborough, maybe Durham?
You mean like the QSAs and GSAs in the school?
Well, like the other student groups. I mean, is the Inside Out group of these folks that are involved with that type of lifestyle accepted among the rest of the students in the school? Are they pushed to the side? I don't know anything about it.
So I guess, are you asking about how acceptance is within high schools in the area?
Yeah.
So I guess it's different in different schools.
Do they blend with everybody else in classes and other things, or do they pretty much hang out all by themselves in their own group?
Well, I can't speak for all the high schools in the area because I've only gone to one.
Well, I understand, but I'm only asking you about the ones you're familiar with.
I know my experience at Chapel Hill was, as a queer youth, was pretty good. We do only have two gender-neutral restrooms, and these were just put in, I guess, a little over a year now.
Okay.
So it could definitely be better, but there hasn't been any instances of any hate crimes at Chapel Hill specifically that I know of in the past couple years. I know that there were some homophobic graffiti at East mm-hmm. 2 years ago.
Yeah, I want to say it was within the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely there are problems, but I suppose it's not the worst in the nation.
How about back where you were in Charlotte? Was there a group like this group, or were they kind of isolated or blended?
I think that when I grew up was I think that we
that was
10 have
years
come
ago.
A long way since when I was in high school, which was 10 years ago. And I think that when I was in high school, there were a lot fewer people who were out. And I mean, this could be said of any club, but a lot of students, for various reasons, don't engage in their local school clubs, no matter what the club is.
Okay.
Spanish club or the local gay-straight alliance, for a variety of reasons, which could depend on logistical issues with getting rides after school or which teacher is the faculty advisor, all sorts of things. So I would say that it was really difficult to gauge, and not a lot of folks at my school were actually out and openly queer at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we all got along pretty well.
Yeah.
That's great. I was thinking back to my high school, which was in the 1940s
mm-hmm.
during World War II, and the word queer was a word that meant something like that was strange, you know, a piece of fish that didn't taste right, that was queer.
Uh-huh.
The word gay was not a word it meant at all sexually. We didn't even understand that. I mean, I went to a public high school in Ohio, which actually was a terrific high school as far as the student body, because it was during the war, and the town I lived in, city I lived in, was an industrial city, and we had a lot of immigrants, can you believe that? Real live immigrants from Central America and other places who were welcome because we needed them in the war plants, as they called them. And so I went to high school with a lot of these kids from other countries, which was a great experience for me. And they all blended so well. Now, we don't know anybody, there was not, you know, sexual definitions weren't around. And people just got along. And if there were people with other feelings about their sexuality, it didn't show up. It may be within themselves it showed up, but it didn't show up among the student body or even in the community. So what you're doing is so far removed and so far advanced in awakening these opportunities for people to understand each other and work together and maybe get the proper understanding from others. And that's what you need, I think, as much as anything, is to get proper understanding by me and other people of what they're up to. Is that correct? The people that you need or don't you care about what we think?
I suppose the biggest change from my generation and your generation within
there's three generations here.
Yeah.
Or four almost.
Within queer issues is that there's a lot more education now. I think a big part of that was from the gay and trans liberation movement in the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. along with the AIDS epidemic, which really brought...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it really brought gay issues into the spotlight, and people were talking about it, and people knew that gay people existed. And then with the rise of the internet, people can be a lot more open about who they are on certain platforms on the internet. And then from that, definitions are spread out, and so people can really find a label that suits them, and they can learn about other identities that people identify as. And then they are more comfortable then being out.
I had two male cousins, second-generation cousins, both men who were absolutely adored by our family. This is the Hendrickson family, and adored by other people. And both died of AIDS, mm-hmm. before any treatment was really available. And, their memories are still vivid among our family and among many friends of these young men. One was a psychologist and taught children, and then the other had a college education, went to Yale, but I'm not sure what his profession was. But anyway, they're gone, and in those days that kind of happened. And today, people with any kind of sexual disability can pretty well get good treatment.
Yeah, I guess that really goes for people of higher classes. There is still an AIDS epidemic happening with gay and bisexual black men in the South.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, anyway, you folks out there listening, you're listening to a conversation with Jasper Cobb and with Christine Abernathy about youth activity in this area and maybe youth activity countrywide. And Jasper will be going into Canada in a few days, and she'll wake up the people in Montreal. I'm sure you'll get a reputation shortly after you arrive, or maybe you've already sent advance notices up there that here I come. And Christine, is you're not actually employed by Youth Community Project now?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Okay. So are you employed by anybody?
I work full-time for Habitat for Humanity of Orange County.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, you folks are listening to WCOM. This is your voice in the community. WCOM is supported by people in the community. Many businesses and individuals support this station. You can go to our website, WCOMFM.org. We have a brand new website, and it will give you lots of information, and we'll tell you how to listen to the shows and how to make a contribution. Or you can stop by here. We are at 300 Main Street in Carrboro, attached to the front of the world-famous Art Center, and you can slip a check in an envelope under the door, and we will give you credit for that. Any money that comes to this station is tax-deductible, so keep that in mind. We'll talk some more about some underwriters of this particular show later on, but I want to continue our conversation with these two sharp, bright, creative. How many adjectives should I add to your names?
As many as you want.
As long as they're positive, right? Okay. So back to you, Jasper. How do you you're really interested in climate change, environmental stuff down the road? You're going to have to go to get an education. You have to go to college somewhere to do that, right?
Yeah.
You can't just pick up it off a box top of a box of cereal. So what do you plan to do to follow this desire, which I think is important?
Yeah. So I guess I would go to college somewhere some like marine biology or climatology or something like that. And then hopefully work on a research vessel in the field and do research on like the ocean and how climate change and ocean acidification is hurting and affecting the entire world population.
So what brought you to make that decision about the ocean situation?
So I guess in like second or third grade, I read a book about the Titanic and about Robert Ballard, who is the oceanographer who actually found the Titanic.
Oh, that's right. A lot of stories about that.
Yeah. So I was then endlessly inspired by that, by someone going in like a tiny like tin can to like 2 miles down at the bottom of the ocean and found like this really old boat. And I thought that was dope. And so I started doing a lot more research about the ocean and like fishes and deep sea creatures. And then like I found out, oh, like there's so much carbon in the water and there's so much runoff of pesticides and other pollutants in the ocean that it's actually making the ocean water acidic, mm-hmm. Which is then killing off lots of different animal life and plant life.
And the ocean, you read in about the Pacific with miles of plastic floating around.
Yeah, the Pacific garbage patch.
Right, that's right. So, well, I'm sure that you can find a good education at a good university, whether it's in the East Coast or the West Coast or Australia or someplace to satisfy your desire and get into this. We have a good friend in Durham who works for the Environmental Protection Agency, and his role is wood smoke. He is in charge of, I guess I could say in charge of, he's a national officer in the Environmental Protection Agency of activities, of problems with wood burning and mm-hmm. and smoke that's polluting the air from certain types of wood smoke. So there's all kinds of opportunities for you. You're not going to be sitting around wondering.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, of all the groups that you were in, what do you see happening with the, like, you there are groups, these have title, Youth Community Project and Youth Advisory Board and the Inside Out group, they all have a positive flavor to them. They're all trying to accomplish something of value. Is that a good way to talk about them?
Yeah.
Okay. So do people join because they're recruited, or do you join because you had a basic interest, desire, and urge to do something, I think, from what you told me?
Yeah. So it's just like someone were to join a soccer team. They want to play soccer. I want to do activism.
Okay. But do you try to – are you an evangelist for activism to interest other people, or do you kind of just do your role and hope that other people will follow along?
Well, I guess whenever I meet new people, I talk to them to find out about their interests, and I talk about my interests. And if they're interested in changing the world or doing activism, then I guess I'll recruit them.
Okay. Is that a good answer to that, Christine?
Well, I think that one thing that I would say that Jasper embodies that I think is necessary of any leader is the ability to engage people and to listen. And I think that by listening to folks and, you know, like Jasper said, have a conversation, see what folks are interested in, and then offer them an opportunity to engage in the work, in this case of trying to create good in the community and in the world. And then the other important thing is to lead by example, which I'm sure you've seen that Jasper certainly does, by stepping up whenever asked, by writing letters to the editor, by speaking out, by being involved as a leader in these organizations. I firmly believe that itself is infectious. And mm-hmm. Seeing other people taking on these big problems and big systems is what inspires other people to join them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those are the two ways in which you really get people involved in a movement. And I think that Jasper does both of those very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, in overall activities of these positive, high motivation organizations, what kind of opposition is there of any sort? Public opposition, outspoken opposition, or this underground opposition? What do you think about that?
Well, I suppose there's always opposition against teenagers getting an effective and comprehensive sex ed. Thought that teenagers aren't having sex or they should be and that we should be teaching abstinence only. I think that is some of the biggest oppositions that I've faced. I haven't really faced any opposition for youth empowerment, 'cause I guess...
You haven't?
No. Okay. If someone would, it would just be them saying that youth shouldn't be empowered and that doesn't sound good. So I think that would just be... nobody would come out and say that they don't like youth empowerment.
Well, okay. Gosh, you about to say something, Christine?
Yeah, I think that challenges exist in a variety of forms. I think that Jasper is right that comprehensive sex education is a more contested issue, especially in public education. And I would also say that the current landscape lends itself to us not facing outspoken opposition. When I talk to other adults in the community about working with youth and having youth really lead an organization and a movement, the Youth Community Project, one of our goals is to have a teen-run teen center that we believe is essential for the vitality of a teen center, is to have buy-in from young people.
We're here?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, in Chapel Hill.
Chapel.
And... I think that it's typically when an adult is talking to an adult that you hear the naysayers and the adults that say, well, you know, there needs to be
bad opinions
there needs
about
to be,
teen
yeah,
center.
Yeah. Bad opinions about letting youth run with their ideas, about supporting them, about giving them freedom and creativity to just believing in them enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's also a lot of opposition and misunderstanding around the needs of queer youth. And so I think that a lot of the opposition comes in this area in just not understanding what the needs are. The Youth Community Project runs a queer youth circus, which teaches queer youth aerial arts, which is the stuff, if you've seen Cirque du Soleil, when the people are dangling on fabric they're on a trapeze, that's aerial arts. And I think a lot of people ask what the need is there, where if you're in the queer community, you understand the value of mixing your identity and your sexuality in feeling physically safe and powerful in your own body. But a lot of these needs are not met with open opposition. They're just met with lack of support and questions.
Sure. That's okay.
And so I think it does depend on the issue, as Jasper touched on. But I think the opposition comes in different forms.
Well, okay. That's interesting about the opposition. Some people are just let it go. There it is, let it go. Now, your mother was a support of you?
Yeah, she's been pretty supportive of me and my activism.
Yeah, she has been.
Yes, okay. I guess.
Does she try to direct you toward one type of interest or another type of interest? Now, your mother's involved with air quality.
Yeah, I think it's more I direct her. Into her own interests. I guess when I first learned about climate change, or it was global warming back in the early 2000s, I went up to my mom and I was like, hey, like, what is this? This is not okay. And then by me learning more about it and then educating her, she got involved with, it was then the recycling center, and then she got involved with Clean Air Carolina.
Right. Now she's going to be leaving that and going to Canada.
Yeah.
Okay. So changing the subject a minute, what's the situation about environmental cleanliness in Canada?
I guess the province of Alberta has the tar sands.
Oh, they do. That's right.
Which is this like giant just like oil dump in the middle of the prairie.
Right.
And so it's a big, huge oil refinery. And because of that, there's a lot of pipelines like the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access Pipeline going from these tar sands and taking unrefined oil down to the southern United States.
Mm-hmm.
Canada and their oil.
Is that a clean air deal, or what kind of element of environmental needs to be helped there?
Well, if you take Canada as a whole and look at their carbon output, and but you ignore the tar sands, then it's actually pretty good. Yeah. But with the addition of the tar sands in there, it's just as much as the United States and China, if not more.
Well, don't the tar sands now send some to the Pacific and out that way through Vancouver to China or Japan? Isn't that what I heard?
Probably.
Okay. And that tar sand stuff has been in all the papers and for decades.
Yeah.
And I know we've tried to do a lot of to get it down here, and it's still controversial. It's always going to be controversial no matter what happens, whether they succeed in getting it through the pipelines or whether they don't succeed. There'll be controversy about that. Okay. All right. Now, we only have about five or so minutes before we have to sign off for the next show. I just want to make sure that I understand the issues of youth activity and its power. What power is this activity of youth creating in this community, at least where you're all familiar? What is the spread, and what is the public acceptance, and what things are possibly happening as a result?
One of the youth community projects, future project, is Freedom Summer.
Mm-hmm.
What's that? Freedom Summer?
Yeah. So a collective of youth-serving organizations are working to bring a Freedom School to Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Freedom School was founded through the civil rights movement during Freedom Summer to educate young people about what they might not be taught in school in terms of how to organize, alternative history narratives, and it's essentially an intensive education environment meant to cultivate young people as leaders and advocates for the change that they see as necessary for happening in the world for them to thrive.
Well, Freedom School is, define that again, please.
So the Freedom School is, it's founded in the civil rights movement.
Okay.
During Freedom Summer.
Okay.
And in these schools, alternative education was taught. So education outside of what we might think of being currently taught in public school, whether it's in terms of history or sex education. And so Freedom Summer is the idea is to bring these organizing and activism principles to Chapel Hill and Carrboro to work to train youth as advocates and leaders in the community so they can realize the change that they need.
Who supports Freedom School is not part of the public system. It's it's not, right?
Right. Yeah. So we piloted Freedom School last year, collaborating with a variety of youth-serving organizations, some of which are nonprofits, but all of which are community-based rather than government-based, with the exception of the Teen Center. The Chapel Hill Teen Center has lended support in various ways as much as they can.
I thought you said you didn't have a teen center.
There is a teen center. It's in the basement of the post office.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I encourage you to go and take a tour at any time. it is a basement that can...
Is it populated by teens or just bugs and flies?
A little column A, a little column B.
Yeah, these are both.
Yeah. And so one thing that we're advocating for in terms of a teen center is to have a teen center with maybe facilities that actually demonstrate a commitment to teen services in this town, which the current teen center can only accommodate, I think it's 100 teens at a time, which... You know, when we pack it out for concerts, which is really the director of the Teen Center has done a great job, that could quickly be exceeded very easily. We have around, I think it's 6,000 teens in Orange County. And so there's certainly a gap there. So when we talk about a teen center and our vision, it's more about commitment from the towns and counties towards teen services overall, and being embodied in a teen center where youth can organize and advocate for their needs.
Well, you're involved with Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Hillsborough, Orange County school system is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Is there activity like you guys are doing here up there, or is that too far out in the country for you?
That's not within where we work.
I know.
As part of the Youth Community Project.
The Habitat for Humanity works there, though.
Spot on.
Right.
I could speak to youth engagement. We have a Habitat Club at Cedar Ridge, and I think that there's different opportunity there in terms of, again, there's a lot of opportunities and challenges in terms of where organizing happens and what it looks like. But I would say that there is like a burgeoning movement of young people who are really capable, who care a lot and just need to know where to put the energy.
My grandson, who went to Cedar Ridge, founded an environmental club. He's off at Oberlin College now, studying the same kind of thing in colleges, in college that he helped create in high school. So I guess that's kind of an active, you'd call that activism, I guess, would you, Jasper? And you found a club like that in your high school?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's many, many, many different forms of activism. Really being active in your community, hoping for change and fighting for change is activism.
What do you feel about the activity of folks who demonstrate physically and loudly for issues of sorts?
Like protests?
Yeah, protest groups.
Yeah, that's a form of activism.
I know. Well, is that a form that you would support in some cases, or
yeah.
do you think it's not essential?
I think it is essential, protesting and speaking loudly about what you want, what you need, and how your rights are being violated. If you look back at the history of social justice movements within the United States, like the Civil Rights Movement, the Women's Lib, Gay Lib, the AIDS epidemic, all of it change has come through protests and through marches,
mm-hmm.
And through boycotts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, guys, it's really great to talk with you and to listen to you talk. We have to sign off in a few minutes, but I want to thank you both for coming today and for expressing yourselves so eloquently. You know, Jasper, I wish you all the best up in Canada.
Thank you.
We're going to miss you in town.
Yeah.
You're going to miss her, right?
Oh, yeah.
You got somebody to take her place?
We do. We have folks taking over the reins, but you know, Jasper will certainly be missed. Yeah.
I'd like to thank a few people for helping to support this show. I'd like to thank the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters. This is a group of professionals who help people work their way through the difficulties of finding health insurance for themselves or their families. I'd also like to thank Tim Hux. Tim Hux runs a business called Rising Tide, which is a business that is a financial advisor company that will help you work your way through your finances, whether they be good times or bad. And I'd also like to thank retired Ambassador Michael Cotter. You ladies should meet him. He's been on the show maybe 12 times. He was in the Foreign Service of the United States for his entire career. He was assigned to maybe 8 different countries over the life. He's now retired. He lives in Farrington, but he's working at UNC also. And so he is an underwriter of this show, and he'll be on the show in late August. And I would also like to thank a friend of Community Radio. This is Community Radio, by the way, who will support Community Radio until the end of time. And that's not bad to have somebody who will stick around that long. Next week, we're going to be talking with another organization which I really feel very fond of. It's the Neighborhood Community Trust, which is an organization to help find affordable housing for people in this county. And you guys are in the county, and they're in the county. See, one thing about Orange County and Chapel Hill, Carrboro particularly, there's a lot of well-run nonprofits, organizations that have motives like you women do. And so Robert Dowling and Camille Berry have been on the show before, and they will be here with us next week. And the week after that is another interesting woman. This is time for women on this show. She is working to help, and she's done a great job in helping to remove and clean up these organizations that make high interest loans to people of what they call them, front porch, but people who walk in who need $500 and borrow $500 and get stuck with an interest payment of half that. When they come back to need some more money, they have to pay their interest. It's a long-term problem for people who get involved with these payday loans, they call them. And she has been working nationally. She was recently in Washington, and she's gotten a lot of different states to help solve this difficulty of payday loans. So she'll be on the show in 2 weeks. So that's it, guys. Thanks again. Hey, send me a postcard from Canada. I have your email, so I'll probably send you some notes and ask you to do some, maybe we can do a phone interview sometime.
Yeah. Give me a little update.
After you're there for a while. And I hope to see you again, Christine. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And I have your email. I don't have your email. So give me your email so we can get in touch down the road if you want to talk some more about what you're doing, particularly Habitat.
Certainly. Yeah, I'd love to connect.
Okay, guys, I'm signing off and turning on the music, and we will be back with you next Monday at the same time.